Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
I've mentioned more than once that at common law, I'm talking about the earliest versions of the law, a lot of crimes are more broad than many people expect. So I've mentioned, for example, kidnapping. And many people think of kidnapping as you abduct somebody, you take them away, and you send ransom notes and that kind of thing. And that was, of course, a common plot in 70s police shows. But kidnapping at common law literally meant that you simply moved or held somebody against their will with the use or threat of force. And so that's a much, much narrower thing. And so I've mentioned it before, and I have people who want to talk about examples of that, and then they want to argue about it sometimes. And I don't make this stuff up. But Vincent sent me a note and said, Steve, here's an interesting story out of Virginia that will actually help explain and illustrate that concept. Because a man down in Virginia was arrested and convicted of abduction. And who he abducted was a person who worked for, I believe, the county or the township, had pulled up his driveway and then backed out, went down the street and pulled up another driveway. And because he was apparently upset about this person pulling up their driveway, he got in his vehicle and went over and blocked the person into someone else's driveway, approached the car and said, "What were you doing in my driveway?" And the woman explained that she actually was a code officer, and she said, "Here's my card, call my office and we'll talk about it," because she didn't feel safe. And he said, "No, you're not leaving until we settle this." And so she jumped on the phone and started calling for help. And the guy, according to the testimony, got agitated and was, acting unruly. But he said, "You're not leaving." And so finally, she did leave, but I think she drove across somebody's lawn to do it. And they charged the man with abduction because he blocked her in the driveway. And now, Virginia has a statute on abduction. But the way it's written, it follows very closely to what the old common law concept was. So it's kind of a lengthy case. It might be a long video, for which I now apologize. But the case is called Joseph E. Brown versus Commonwealth of Virginia. But that's because this is on appeal. And a lot of places, when something's on appeal, they put the person appealing as the first party and then the appellee as the second party. So the case at trial would have been the Commonwealth of Virginia versus him, okay? So his name is Brown. I'm just going to refer to him as Brown from here on out. Following a trial in the Charles City County Circuit Court, Brown was convicted of abduction in violation of Code Section 18.2-47. He now appeals, first arguing the evidence was insufficient to support a conviction for abduction. Second, he contends the trial court erred in denying his motion to disqualify the prosecutor. Third, he argues that even if he did abduct the victim, that he had a legal justification for doing so. And then finally, he says that it was unfair of the prosecutor, who at one point apparently offered him a plea deal on a misdemeanor charge. And when he rejected that, they said, "Well, we're going to prosecute you as a felony then." And so apparently that was what was going on there. And when he turned down the misdemeanor offer, he said that they shouldn't have been allowed to charge him with a felony. By the way, this was a bench trial, meaning this was not a jury that reached this conclusion. It was a judge. But I presume the reason that there's a bench trial is the man waived the right to a jury. And you can do that also. So here's the story written by the Court of Appeals based on the transcripts of the trial. On July 10th of 2020, a Charles City County Community Development Director and Assistant County Administrator, and she's a woman, drove to appellant's home to check whether appellant had remedied a previous ordinance violation regarding an excess of inoperable vehicles in his yard. So apparently, they'd cited the guy for saying, "You got too many cars in your yard that don't run." So Russell, that's the woman, drove into the driveway enough to see that there were significantly fewer cars. She then drove to her next site down the street from appellant's house. So she pulled up the driveway, looked, back down the driveway, and then went down the street. So she pulled up the driveway, and it does not appear she even got out of her car. She pulled up the driveway and backed away. After parking her car in the next site's driveway, she sat in the car and was taking notes. While doing so, Brown approached her vehicle and tapped on the window. She rolled down her window, and Brown told her he was tired of the county messing with him and asked her why she was on his property a few minutes earlier. And what's interesting about that is that she's no longer on his property. She was on his property. Now she's on someone else's property. And by the way, so is Brown. Brown is now standing on someone else's property, complaining about this woman coming onto his property. She then handed him a business card, said, call my office. He then became irritable, cursed at her and said, you're going to talk about this right now. You're going to talk about this right now. She told appellant that she did not want to talk about the issue because he was upset. She then put her car in reverse and was attempting to leave the scene, but noticed that Brown's car was blocking her from getting out of the driveway. She then asked him to move his car, but he refused, saying, I'm not going to move the car. You're going to stay here, and you're going to tell me what you're doing here. Again, here is not his house. His house is down the street that way, or maybe that way. But she's at someone else's house now. And he actually said, you're going to tell me what you're doing here. Now, you might say, Steve, wait a second. Some people have caught this. How do we know what he said? Because don't a lot of criminal defendants not take the stand? Apparently, he testified. So whether that was the right thing to do or not, I don't know. But it's possible that some of these quotes were brought out in court and said, did you say this? Because the court on appeal accepted that this is a fact. You're going to stay here and you're going to tell me what you're doing here. At this point, Russell felt she did not have the freedom to leave the scene and experienced anxiety going through the roof with her heart beating fast, notwithstanding the fact she was generally not an anxious or very emotional person. She told appellant she would call the police if he did not move his car, to which he responded, he would also call the police. She then tried to contact the sheriff's department, but her calls initially didn't go through due to poor cell service out in a rural area. After numerous attempts, she eventually got in touch with the sheriff's department and requested immediate assistance. During this call, appellant was outside of the car, very agitated and irritable, flailing his arms. After that call, Brown also called the police, asked him to come to the scene to resolve the issue, and told the 911 dispatcher that he got Russell blocked in. That's a quote here, and I suspect that they could get that off of the 911 transcript. They could also get it from, perhaps, if he took the stand and admitted it, but the court here finds as a fact that he told the dispatcher he got Russell blocked in. Now, while he was talking to the dispatcher, Russell looked for a way out of the situation and ultimately escaped by driving her vehicle across the grass and through a drainage ditch. She then parked on the street near the site, and from there, both she and Brown waited for the police to arrive and take statements and so on. So at the trial, the appellant, Brown, moved to strike the evidence. Among other things, he argued that the code provided him a legal justification for detaining her. He specifically argued the statute applied to her because she was a government agent who intruded onto his private property, searching for violations without a warrant. The trial court disagreed, ruling that that section did not apply to Russell and did not provide a legal justification for the detention of Russell. Brown testified in his own defense. He claimed he did not intend to abduct her. He emphasized he made no physical contact with her. And he even said that he had suffered from strokes prior to his encounter with her. The trial court found him guilty of abduction and sentenced him to 3 years incarceration, however, with all time suspended. At the sentencing hearing, Brown's counsel revealed that the felony abduction charge was initially dismissed in general district court and that the prosecutor then obtained a true bill from a grand jury. The prosecutor responded that he offered an appellant a plea deal where appellant would plead guilty to a misdemeanor, disorderly conduct in exchange for the dropping of the felony charge, but appellant refused. Just so you know, the court lays out the standard review and says that when reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence on appeal to support a conviction, the court will affirm the judgment unless the judgment is plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. So the court will then go through all of the evidence and see if the evidence that was presented in court would support a conviction. And again, we're not second-guessing a jury here, but we are looking at a judge who ruled as a jury because there was no jury in the case. And the court finds that the evidence was sufficient to support a conviction for abduction. Keep in mind, she's parked in a driveway. He pulls in behind her and simply blocks her in. Never touches her. Doesn't touch the car as far as we know. Didn't threaten her other than to say, you're not leaving till we talk. So she's blocked in. And the court is saying that is enough for an abduction charge to stick in Virginia. Appellant contends the evidence was insufficient, and his argument primarily rests on two facts, that he did not have any physical contact with her, and that she eventually got away. Eventually. A person is guilty of abduction in Virginia if by force, intimidation, or deception, and without legal justification or excuse, he seizes, takes, transports, detains, or secretes another person with the intent to deprive such other person of his personal liberty. By the way, the word secrete is pronounced that way, and it's like the word secret with an E, but it's not like something that secretes a fluid or something. It literally means to take something and hide it, or to put something out of view, and it's an old school term. But here the allegation was that he detained her. The court goes into this and then says, a rational trier of fact could conclude that appellant's conduct met all those elements. First, the evidence was sufficient to find appellant committed the act of abduction because he detained her. A defendant detains his victim by keeping the victim in a specific place through the use of force, intimidation, or deception. The trial court held that appellant detained Russell through the use of intimidation. And the intimidation would be, you know, you're staying here, you're not leaving until we talk about this. Intimidation is defined as unlawful coercion, extortion, duress, putting in fear. Any one of those things would qualify. A defendant intimidates a victim if he puts the victim in fear of bodily harm by exercising such domination and control as to overbear her will. And intimidation can occur even in the absence of an overt expression of an intention to do bodily harm. Instead, a victim suffers fear of bodily harm in the abduction context if the defendant imposes psychological pressure on the victim who, under the circumstances, is vulnerable and susceptible to such pressure. Here, the appellant blocked her vehicle in the driveway and refused to move his car to allow her to leave, declaring he would not let her depart until she explained her prior presence on his property. And what's more, he was agitated and irritable throughout the conflict, cursing at her and flailing his arms. The trial court could have rationally seen appellant's conduct as imposing psychological pressure on her, especially when considering the location where the incident took place, out in the country, she's in her car with bad phone service and so on, and they talk about all of those things. Now, even though she escaped eventually the blockade by driving through grass in a ditch, that does not preclude a finding that appellant detained Russell prior to that point. And that's one of the interesting arguments here. There's no time frame that says if you're abducted for more than 5 minutes, it's an abduction. If you're abducted for more than an hour, it's an abduction. No, if you're abducted for any length of time, but there is no temporal requirement, which means a victim can be detained under the statute even if only for the briefest of moments. And I know right now somebody's going to go, Steve, a millisecond, a microsecond. Well, obviously, if somebody got detained for a fraction of a second and they were prosecuted for that, a jury would hopefully come back and go, really? No, not guilty. So that's not what happened here, though. But I know some people will want to argue that just because they like arguing about stuff. So meanwhile, after he blocked her car, he informed her she was going to talk about the citation right now and that he would not let her leave until the two sorted out the problem. When she asked appellant to move his vehicle, he refused to do so. And additionally, he said, I got her blocked in during the 911 call. They have the square brackets around her name, so it could have been I got her blocked in, but I'm guessing that that's what he said. By appellant's own language and actions, the trial court could rationally conclude he intended to restrict her freedom of movement. And now, he did testify he did not intend to detain her. But that's where you get the little gem about he testified. Although he testified he did not intend to detain her, it was entirely permissible to infer that every person intends the natural and probable consequences of his or her acts. So he did all the things necessary to detain her. And he says, well, I didn't intend to. Well, did you intend to block her in? Yes. Did you tell her you weren't going to let her leave? Yes. What does it mean then that you didn't intend to detain her? You did. Similarly, the trial court was also entitled to disbelieve his self-serving testimony and to conclude that he's lying to conceal his guilt. And that, of course, is always one of the jeopardies of testifying in the first place, is that people look at you and go, of course you're going to say that. You're trying to get out of a charge where there's, you know, things don't look that good. Meanwhile, let's get back to this legal justification, because he said that he had a legal justification or excuse as to why he did what he did. And there is a statute that says that no officer of the law or any other person shall search any place, thing, or person except by virtue of and under a warrant issued by a proper officer. And they then say that if a person does that, they're guilty of malfeasance in office, and it provides relief through compensatory and punitive damages. So he says, hey, look, if I held her, it's because she's committing malfeasance in office, and that's a violation of the law. But it says here, and this is the court writing, even assuming that she was an officer of the law or any other person as defined in that code, the statute nonetheless is unavailable to him as legal justification. By its plain terms, a person aggrieved by a violation of that code may seek only compensatory and punitive damages in a civil action against the violating party. And that's one of the things that a lot of people get wrong. And they think that in the law, if you can show that the other party did something wrong, you get off scot-free. So people often say, well, I might have done something wrong, but so did he. Okay, you both did something wrong. They don't cancel each other out. And I've seen a ton of people make those comments regarding cops. They'll say a police officer did this while he's making this arrest. Depends on what he did. But two wrongs don't cancel each other. I know what you thought I was going to say. But they don't cancel each other. If, in fact, she had done what he thought, his remedy was to sue her. His remedy is not to abduct her, obviously. So they point out that if he wanted to, he could have tried suing her for compensatory and punitive damages. And then they point out that there are statutes that actually do allow for the detention of wrongdoers, such as shopkeeper's privilege. So a shopkeeper in many states, including Virginia, have the right under certain circumstances to detain suspected shoplifters. And I'm not going to get into that because there's a whole lot of stuff going on there. But just know that there are laws that say you can. But the law he's citing does not say that. So the code does not permit the aggrieved party to detain the violating official. And so if what she had done was malfeasance in office, it's not a crime that would subject the violator to arrest, certainly not a crime for which somebody could make a citizen's arrest, and certainly what he did doesn't even look like a citizen's arrest. It looks more like an abduction. And so that's the story out of Virginia. And like I said, it was kind of a long explanation, and I apologize for that. I do have a timer over here. It went off while we were talking. That's how long I've been talking. But a lot of people are going to say, Steve, how far up the driveway did she go? I don't know. People sometimes have driveways that go around their house. Did she like maybe go behind the guy's house? I don't know. The story as told here simply says that she pulled up the driveway far enough to see whether or not he had cars in his backyard. And I can see situations where that would be intrusive, might not be intrusive. But if she's a code enforcement officer of some sort, presumably she's allowed to do some kinds of observation. And as noted, when she saw that the guy didn't have a violation, she was going to leave and go on her way. And it's unclear if this guy here thought he was going to get in trouble for something or he's just being annoyed by the whole thing. But the point is that she pulled up the driveway, No cars. She went down. She was in someone else's driveway when he blocked her in. I'm not saying it would be a case that he'd get away with if he blocked her in his own driveway, but he certainly loses a lot of his argument when she's in someone else's driveway. So it's a fascinating case. Vincent, thanks for sending it. From the Court of Appeals of Virginia, Joseph E. Brown versus the Commonwealth of Virginia on appeal. His appeal was denied, and he was still found, his conviction is going to stand, for abduction. Questions or comments, put them below. Let's talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. A successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him.